Hello and welcome back to The Dive, season 8, episode number 5. Woo! Thank you, MasterCard. That was left over from our opening day. I just saw it in the hallway and I had to blow it up. The LCS is going on a 2-week break now, but The Dive is not. We never stop.
Nope.
Content machines. Gonna keep pumping it out for you. Don't worry.
Yep, gonna have a dive episode each week like regular. But we are now going to be on that 2-week break. Games will be back March 2nd. There will be some content though coming out, not just The Dive. FlyQuest is also having a show match series this weekend. It's gonna be Saturday, 1 p.m. PST, so normal LCS time. It's gonna be on FlyQuest LCS or FlyQuest Twitch channel, I should say. I know Cap'n Flowers is casting it. And I know at least the first game, I think, is going to be the FlyQuest LCS team versus their academy team. Mm-hmm. And then maybe they're going to do some other stuff after that. I've heard there maybe is some other stuff that's in the works.
Surprise.
Don't know.
Got to tune in and then you'll see.
If I was LCS team, that would be like such a nightmare. Because there's no winning for you. You're expected to win.
You must absolutely
You're expected
pound
to
them.
Stomp. And here's the thing, though. Every time you're on an LCS team playing against your academy team, they don't play like humans. Like, they play to try to ego you. They play to try to be like, look, I'm better than this guy. I deserve his spot.
Yeah.
So it's like any even matchup is like a level one all-in lane. It's just – it's crazy stuff. It should be interesting to watch, but, you know, I don't envy the players.
Do you think – so sometimes I feel like because of that in show matches, players will just pick joke picks. So like, well, I wasn't trying. Like, you know what I mean?
Why
like,
not?
Sometimes people just go with the absolute troll pick. They're just like, well, I picked Yasuo support this game, you know? I was just having some fun.
So I've played in a good amount of show matches, and it's actually the weirdest thing between, like, how hard you want to try and like, you know, how much you want to mess around. Because so my take on it, which is for sure the only correct take,
yep,
is it should depend on if you're winning or not. If you're losing, you should be trying. If you're winning, you should be throwing, right? So it's it should be fun for everybody.
Yeah.
But, like, you get some people in there who's, like, actually just trying to be cutthroat level one, like, let's level one invade these guys. I'm like, bro, they've never played League before. Like, what are we doing?
I've played a lot of
the content creator ones. And stuff.
Yeah.
I've played a lot of show matches, and since I lost the first, like, 7 of them probably, I became really focused on winning and really, really, really try hard. One of the most painful ones was at MSI, where I had Cloud Templar as my top laner. And we set up this whole plan where I was going to start enemy red buff. We invaded, we got the vision. And then I was going to come.
In a show match, by the way.
Yeah, in a show match.
Okay.
And I was going to come level 2 gank top lane. And I was on the way. I literally had one camp, enemy red. And I was coming level 2 to top lane. And he all ends and dies before I get there, like on the first minion wave. And I just lose my mind.
Did they have question mark pings in the game at that time?
Yeah, and I did not use them. I'm a
really. I would have.
I have
said
a
six.
I have a lot down of restraint. I just don't type or spam pink people ever because.
Wow, you're missing out.
If we get reported too much, we could probably lose our jobs. Like if there's Riot had a thing where it looked into people's toxicity for employees, and some people have lost their jobs at Riot.
Being
too toxic.
If you're super toxic, yeah, I mean that makes sense. I think everyone should be held accountable for what they do.
Yeah,
but like. Question marking someone who's running it down.
Kobe,
like,
too many question mark pings.
Oh, we reviewed your account. You have over 2 million question mark pings sent in the last week. What's going on?
See, the thing is, it's like a dam, though. If I let one through, then boom, maybe it'll all just go crash.
Question marks are a gateway
hooked
flame. It's a yep gateway flame. It leads to more dangerous flaming.
Yep,
exactly.
Next thing you know, there'll be Reddit posts about Kobe being the most toxic player on the server.
I've been a jungler for 12 years. You know what's trapped in here?
Some trauma. Lots of trauma.
There's lots of trauma.
Speaking of show match trauma, you remember when we did the Civil War, the like NA,
Canada versus USA?
Canada versus US. Mm-hmm. Did you play in that? Because you would have been in LCS.
Did I either played or was coaching it. I remember I was involved in some way.
I think you're a coach.
I think I was coaching.
Okay. I just remember because Kobe, you were playing Warwick, and Kobe had this history of losing every show match, and so he really wanted to win. And so he was playing Warwick, and our bot lane was, I think, Smoothie and Wild Turtle, and I was playing top lane, and I think we did Huni as our Canadian mid laner,
uh-huh,
and then I think Jat was jungling or something. But anyway, he went bot at level 6 with Warwick, and he ults in, and Smoothie did like a Camille hookshot, and it interrupted his ult, and he was so bad.
Yeah,
that the hook shot overrode the Warwick ult.
Basic ability just is stronger than your ultimate for a champion.
Well, the way you can tell which interaction is going to win out in that is you have to look at release date. Yeah, exactly. Warwick's way too old to win any of those.
That was a funny one. I actually played a game of Warwick recently because I played against the dog guy on he just mains it. It's actually decent now.
Nice. Bro, that champion is so clunky. I cannot play Warwick and then want to play him again for like a year. I don't know. So every once in a while I'll be like, Warwick could be fun here. And then I play him. Nope. Yeah. He was not. That was
the
awful.
The thing about when your E goes off and you have that delay and then the auto attacks before you start getting your attack speed with the it's just so annoying. The one thing that's clunky that I have fully mastered though is the queue timings for holding Qs to follow people's flashes. I laugh every time my team and enemy team is question mark pinging after that happens, and you laugh every time.
One knows how that works, I swear. People will E flash and you're still just
it's so fun. It's so fun to be on the side of the winning bullshit.
Yeah, there you go.
I feel like there's actually a lot of those interactions in the game where things that people fall for every time, even though they should know about them. So the one that I've gotten away with for so long is the Elise Repel. And so you run up to a wall, you have no way of getting out, you're trapped in the Baron or Dragon Pit, you repel, and then they'll drop a ward. They drop a ward so I can get out. Because they want to see where I'm going, but there's nothing for me to go to, and then they let me out. It happens so frequently. I'm just how do you still mess this up?
That's really funny. And with some champions like Warwick, I feel like people just legitimately never play against that champion. Yeah. They just forget what it does.
Yeah, they don't know the mechanics.
That's some of the one trick advantage stuff if you play a really random ass champ. People do not know how your champion even works. They don't know when they win, when they lose.
It almost feels like the game doesn't even know, because it also looks just ridiculous. When Warwick holds Q and follows you on Flash, you're just like, what the hell just happened? You're pinged right over there.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny.
Also, we had the bet last week. So, Kobe, which were the two teams you took? You took Energy and
FlyQuest.
And Meteos and I still thought Cloud9 was going to win.
Yep.
Which is looking a little bit worse maybe after this week. But either way. So the loser's going to have to eat an entire lemon, apparently, on the dive.
Yeah.
Which I've never tried this. I don't know how horrible that's
I don't know why a sane person would try that, so I'm in the same boat
as you. I just don't even eat lemon slices. I'll squirt some lemon in my water. That's about as close as I've gotten to this.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's pleasant. So I'm needing C9 to bounce back here.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, good luck, guys.
I feel confident.
There is a world,
I think we'll do it.
There is a world where we all lose if Energy, FlyQuest, and Cloud9, none of them win.
True.
The way that we drew up the bet, we could all lose if 100 Thieves win or something.
True. Well, we'll have to see how it works out. And we'll obviously, that'll have to be a post-split thing because we said win the whole split. So we wouldn't get the payoff until after the split. But anyway, we're going to jump into LCS a little bit here. Again, 2-week break. We're going to be back March 2nd. But we just came off of week 4 of the LCS. There's only 2 weeks remaining. So we have, a regular week in week 5, and then we have a super week to finish it off in week 6. So 5 games remaining for the teams. And so we thought we'd maybe do a little bit of a power rankings look back, look at what the standings are now versus kind of what we expected. And there is quite a bit of change, I have to say. Just going down the dive aggregate, there's some variance between who we kind of picked and where. But Cloud9 1, Energy 2, TL 3, Fly 4, Shopify 5th, 100 Thieves 6th, and then we had Dig at 7 and IMT at 8 would be the dive aggregate. And then the reality is obviously Fly 1st, 100 Thieves in 2nd is a big shocker, TL in 3rd, Energy, C9, and Dig all tied in 4th technically, but it's a 3-way tie, and obviously pretty surprising to see C9 tied down there, and then Shopify and IMT down in 7th.
I have a proposal that we go about this with the order of the current rankings.
Sure.
Because that feels more positive. We're like, wow, FlyQuest, they did better than we thought we did.
Yeah.
And then when we get to Cloud9, then we'll get to Cloud9.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow, look at you.
We'll address that topic as well. So let's go.
FlyQuest.
Start with FlyQuest and the best team in the league. There seemingly has been no time where I feel like a lot of us were accounting for some training time when you're bringing back some pros who were not in League of Legends professional play at all last year in Inspired and Bwipo, and then pairing some of these veterans with the young bottom lane. and not having, you know, complete faith that was going to work right out of the gate. But FlyQuest 7-2, and they have not only not had a lot of problems in their games, but it feels like the players have bonded really quickly, which is so important in league, in most, you know, team games, to be fair. But they're so complimentary of each other. You know, you have Blippo going up afterwards, super hyping up their, you know, young bottom lane. And it just seems like they've got the correct recipe to stay at the top of the standings.
Yeah, I think the question for me with Fly was, like, how's their bot lane going to do? Because, you know, Busio's still fairly new. But I think they've done pretty well. I think they had, like, the one game where they got smashed really hard bottom, and they kind of got blown out. But I think what you were saying about veterans coming back after a break is – because I've done that a couple times where, you know, like, I took a split or a year off, and then I came back, and I usually get pretty nervous when that happens just because, you know, how behind am I going to be? Mm-hmm. But every time, it doesn't feel as bad once I'm actually in it and playing. It's like it all comes back. You can't forget it kind of thing. So it is cool to see Inspired and Blippo doing well even after taking a break. And, yeah, I mean, I think they've definitely overperformed expectations. I didn't think they'd be bad, but yeah, first place, pretty good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think I've been really impressed, you know, with the team in general. But similar to what you guys are saying, you know, for me, my big question was, like, were they going to be able to get enough out of their bot lane to consistently take down top teams? And I wasn't sure that would happen early on, that it would take some more development time. Even just from talking to you know, their coaches and stuff, I think they even thought it was going to take more development time. And that's kind of a theme with some of the teams at the top, because Golden Glue was like, yeah, I'm surprised too. You know, like some of these players are just stepping up and doing a really good job. Jensen, I think, has also been really kind of consistent. He's not doing anything like really creative or out there. He's kind of just playing control mages and doing well, right? He's basically just spamming Orianna, Azir, that's it. And you know, I think he's kind of delivered what the team needed. I know talking to NukeDuck before the split, he was saying that one of the things he thought was going to make Jensen work on this team is that Jensen didn't have to do anything on this team except just focus on his own individual play. Like they were basically saying Jensen doesn't have to be a leader on the team. He doesn't have to be shot calling. He doesn't have to. We just need him to do well in lane and do damage in team fights. Like that's what we need from him.
That's actually a really good perspective to have, because something that I've seen happen a lot is, like, you know, experienced players kind of just naturally get pushed into a leadership role because, you know, it's like, oh, you're a veteran. You've played on these successful teams. You should know how to lead everyone. But honestly, you don't even want a team of all leaders, right?
Yeah.
There are some people that you just want to be solid. Like, I will do my job. I'll have good awareness, and I will go with whatever plan we have, that kind of thing.
Turn off your brain, buddy. Go ahead.
No, I mean,
let me see those mechanics.
The thing is, you need, like, I've always said this on teams. So, like, in my mind, the most important person, like, obviously the shot caller, like the leader, that is an important role. But what I think is the secret most important role is, like, the guy who's backing up the calls. You know, the guy who's like, okay, guys, like, we got to listen
man
to their call. Right, exactly.
Cause like, let's go, Baron. Like, hell yeah, Baron's a great call.
Yeah, dude, the thing is, on C9 initially, I feel like we had that with High. Like, High was our shot caller or whatnot. He made a lot of the calls. And we'd always back him up. And even if someone wanted to fight it, they'd be like, no, F you. Like, follow the call kind of thing. And so I think that's super important. Because if you have a team of everyone who's, like, trying to make calls, but no one actually wants to listen and follow, like, that's going to be so dysfunctional.
And this is a team that could have had that, because Whippo talks a lot about League of Legends, both in and out of game. Inspired has a very clear cut plan on how he wants to play, and that's seemingly, from what they've been saying, the main one that they've gone for. And Busio also really wanted to take a shot calling role. So I think that one of the cool things with this team, and you saw it just this last weekend when they set up the map split where Inspired comes to zone off this Twisted Fate AD carry for the first, like,
that was so
five waves, and Tacticals on one CS.
For, that was so nasty, bro.
Right, that's such, it's just
the
one of the
excitement around that lasted for 30 seconds.
Dude, it was crazy. Like, I watched him walk up and try to last hit the first wave, and I said, yep, this is doomed.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Those types of things are what give me so much confidence in FlyQuest staying here, because FlyQuest, they don't have some of the stats that we're used to seeing from a first place team. They don't have this 2,500 gold lead at 15 minutes. They're 861 on average ahead at 15 minutes, which usually our first place team just absolutely blasts people in the early game. Oh, excuse me, wrong team.
That's,
that's so awkward.
That is awkward. Oh, God, let me look at FlyQuest. Please also not have
that. Please also 861. Please also 861.
They have 317, so they don't have a crazy early
That's
game.
Even worse. Nice. That's even better for my point, like I was saying all along.
Wow, that is such a good point.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have this crazy early game lead, guys. We're just going to edit that for sure. 317 average gold lead? That's even less than Cloud9. Did you know Cloud9 had 860?
I did actually. Yeah, I knew that.
I remember reading that stat.
Yeah, it's a really funny coincidence there. But it's a lot in how FlyQuest are managing their win conditions and how they're setting up, attacking opponent win conditions from draft, which is it's really cool to see. It's not a team that has to blast you early. And then you get these interviews from like Bwipo, how he's so confident in champions like Olaf, and he thinks it's much more scaling than other people take it as. And it's just they have a lot of confidence in their game plan, and they don't seem to panic too much once they're once they're in there.
Yeah, they've looked solid. No, no big weaknesses. Looking forward to see if they can keep it up. Or, the problem with getting number one in the standings is then everyone starts caring about their matchup with you more.
Yeah,
it's way better to be, chilling middle of the pack, mm-hmm. like turn it on for playoffs kind of team than the front runner.
The Cloud Knight cope is back.
I'm just saying, it's how it always goes. So, they're going to have targets on their back that people are going to be looking at their draft saying, oh, hey, they're winning every game where they get this. Let's see how they do off that. Or, it looks like this guy has the smallest champion puddle I've ever seen and they ban him out. So, they got to be ready for people coming after them.
People study your patterns for sure. Something that is kind of interesting to me is how little they've actually done Herald. They've gotten one Herald in the whole split so far, which is kind of bizarre for a team that's winning every game. But it is interesting to see teams prio on like Grubs versus Herald versus Dragons and stuff. Yeah, they have the average 0.11 Heralds per game, which I think they've played 9 games, right? So we're how many have they played? It's 9, right? So that would be like literally one Herald that they've gotten the whole split.
Maybe nobody knows how to drive it. Maybe in scrims they're just crashing into the wall 24/7.
I said this on our beginning of season podcast, but the new Herald is dog, actually, compared to the previous versions of Herald. You get so much less gold out of this one.
Because you don't get plate gold.
You don't get plate gold, so you can't take it super early. And it takes longer to take as well. It's a big time investment. Especially as jungler, I'm like, my time is more valuable. I just got to play for myself. I could get like 3 camps during the Herald timing. I only go get it when I have my AD carry or my mid laner with me, also DPSing it. Otherwise,
yeah, I always just see it as a tool to break open mid tower, because mm-hmm. any winning game, you the way you win more is by killing the mid tier one. Like, as soon as that's done,
the objective steps are so much easier.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for jungling especially is like you can now connect both sides of their jungle. Like, you can go from their raptors to their wolves without taking several turret shots on the way. So so yeah, that for sure is the biggest reason to take it, but sometimes you can do that without it.
Have you, because it sounds like you haven't done this, but some people go into practice school to practice trying to get across and only taking one tower shot. I actually went one day and spent like 30 minutes just going across both sides of mid trying to do the one tower shot thing. As an Elise, I feel like you also.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's super hard to do. It depends a little bit on your champion's hitbox, but also I don't think there's that many situations where I need to be doing that. It's kind of a fringe thing to do. It's the time I see it most is those. So I don't know if it's still that common with the new jungle stuff, but those dirty Kindred Nidalee players, the ones that will take the red and just walk into your blue, like, this is usually on red side. They get, like, the fat Draven Rel leash or whatever, and then they walk to you at Gromp and invade you when you're on your second cam, and then they walk through mid and invade you on top side, and you're just like, well, this game's dumb.
The reason I did it the day I went to go do it was after the Peanut game where Peanut did that in LCK.
Yep.
And Nidalee is back on top, by the way. Definitely loving those buffs. But back on topic, what was our topic?
100 Thieves. 100 Thieves next. Nice transition there.
Perfect topic.
They are in second place, 6-3. I think one of the biggest surprises, I would say, I mean, FlyQuest is in first. We had them aggregate fourth. But I think they were a team that we like kind of saw that could be in contention. Yep. Art of Thieves, I don't think anyone really believed this would be an actual contender. They were, you know, their aggregate was sixth, basically, 5.63. Kobe had them in fifth. We had them in sixth. But they're in second, right? And they're in sole possession of second place ahead of a lot of teams that people thought were going to be way better than them. I think it is really surprising. Like I said, like I talked to Golden Glue. Golden Glue's like, yeah, we're surprised too. You know, like everyone is surprised by this team. I think, like, if you guys remember, you know, talking to Golden Glue, one of the funniest things was, and talking to a number of different people about Sniper, was people talking about, okay, this guy just has very little game knowledge. You know, it's going to take a long time for him to adjust to LCS. It was like the Rumble thing, you know, with didn't realize his abilities did anything different when you had more heat and stuff like that. And there was just like a number of examples like this about him where they're like, he, you know, intuitively plays the game really well and he has good mechanics, but he doesn't have the knowledge to necessarily succeed on the LCS stage yet. Like he'll maybe get there, but he's actually doing really well. Like he's been solo killing all kinds of experienced top laners. He's been laning well. I feel like he's largely been playing with his team well. Yeah, there's been some oopsies, but for someone who was kind of sold to me as someone who's like this raw, like, you know, he's gonna, I was expecting him to get blown out of the water most games. Plus, all the other LCS top laners, I feel like, were trash-talking this guy, saying he's not shit, right? Like, Licorice, when he came on a guest, was saying, yeah, not that impressed by Sniper, he's not that good. Impact was saying he's not very good at all. Bwipo's mission of, like, making sure he doesn't win Rookie of the Split, he's not good. Like, he has actually really performed super well.
He solo-killed Dokla, Fudge, and Impact all already, as far as top laners, to add to the head-hunting Sniper roster.
He's been doing super well, and I think this last weekend actually for me was, I was super impressed with him because I've been maybe a little bit more on the like reserve side, because you know we've had so many stories of new players, they play solo queue on like 8 ping, they beat at all the pros, and then they come to LCS and they're kind of like average. But Sniper's been kind of exception to that. He's looking super impressive solo killing people. But what impressed me the most this weekend was it was the Aatrox game he was playing, and I don't remember exactly who they were playing against, but...
Is that the one where he killed Fudge? I feel like he killed Fudge in the Aatrox Udyr matchup.
I'll pull it up for you.
Well, he solo killed in both of his games this weekend. It might have been C9.
So he played Aatrox versus Olaf against Fudge, and then versus TL, it was Aatrox versus Impact on Cassante.
I think it was against TL, but he had this team fight where he, like, I remember his team was contesting through mid, and then he was on a flank, like, contesting through bottom side, and it was so good how he was spacing. Basically, he was...
Oh, I remember this, around Dragon.
Yeah, around Dragon, bottom side. He kept baiting them to go on him, but then getting out, like, two different times. He was just creating so much space, not by necessarily, like, going in and doing the classic, like, Aatrox, oh, I'm super fat, I'm going to try to 1v9, kill everyone, but he was just... going in to get their attention and then backing out. And I thought that was super smart. It's something that I think takes a ton of game sense to actually get to that level, to realize, you know, okay, I don't need to be like actually hitting someone the entire fight. I can bait, I can create space, and then find my opening. And so when I saw that, I was like, wow, this guy is actually really good, because I don't know many players who would play it like that. Mm-hmm. And it was like real incredible.
It is more of a veteran thing for sure, because you have to really walk the line, right? If you're too far back, you don't draw any attention, and if you're too far forward, you just int. So it is cool to see then when people can actually play that, because especially like you say, you know, for a rookie coming in and doing that, like that doesn't feel like the rookie move kind of thing. You know, the rookie move is more like, okay, he has good mechanics, he got a solo kill, but then he threw late game or whatever.
The rookie move would be either you are so nervous, all you do is ARAM group with your team and stand there, or when you do have your flank, you get in your head and you just flash in and suicide. So, I mean, he showed a lot of good restraint, kept his head cool, and yeah, you know, I'm kind of on the Sniper train. I think
I for sure am.
He's looking real good.
One of my favorite things is how excited he is just walking around the studio, being here at the LCS, because we have a lot of players that have been here for a long time, and they're just like, oh yeah, business as usual.
Yep.
Hello, walking down the hall. But Sniper is like jumping up and down. He's like, oh, hey, up, you know, getting super excited for every single game that he's about to play. I think there are several things with 100 Thieves, though. Sniper is obviously one of the big stories because he was so hyped up for so long. People have been waiting, you know, this young challenger. Anytime you hit challenger super young, and the history of his whole family, all three brothers getting challenger. But Quid, myself included, I was skeptical about 100 Thieves bringing back Quid. Last year was not the greatest year for him, but he has been a really big part, not just an individual play, but I feel like being willing to play some of these other mid lane matchups like the Aatrox one, the Yone one. Obviously, he does have sort of a preference for some melee champs, but he's also had plenty of other range and control mage champs as well. He's been pretty diverse with his champion pool.
Only one champion has he played twice, and it's Tilia from this weekend.
Yeah, and so I feel like him and his Tilia games were some of his best.
They're nasty.
Really, really good Tilia games. So everybody knew River was going to be good, and that's what we were kind of giving 100 Thieves. But for Quid to be as good as he has been, in addition to Sniper and River and even the bottom lane, is really cool. Oh, coaching staff as well. Golden Glue and Spooks, who they got from Golden Guardians, for them to be able to craft those counter drafts like we were talking about with Shopify Rebellion, I feel like they have had definitely some of the better drafts within the entirety of the LCS.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think Quid, I want to say it was his Saturday game against TL, I thought was the best game he had played.
Is that the Tilia game?
Yeah,
that was...
They were both Tilia games, but...
Oh, okay.
But that one was nasty.
His Tilia was something else. He was just hitting, like...
Double knockbacks.
He was hitting, like, W without setup every fight. He was getting really crazy alts. Oh, the one... this one wasn't really him, but against JoJo in top lane, where he, like, walled him in.
Oh, yeah.
And killed the wave. JoJo kind of, like, lost his mind a little bit there, but, yeah... That was a good game.
That was like barely the wall to keep him towards the tower too.
Yeah.
That was so close to pushing him the other way. It was actually perfect.
Yeah. In the TL game, they had that one play where, I mean, they've been doing pretty well throughout the game, but there was that one play where they kind of like overcommitted in towards Dragon, and TL looked like they were crushing the fight, but he got like a double kill off of an unset up double seismic shove, kills them both, and then that's where they went towards Baron, and I think took Baron after, if I recall correctly, TL got Soul, and they did that super risky Baron rush where one of them even executed to the Baron.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were able to finish it, and I thought it was like so smart to actually be able to do it in that situation. And him getting the double kill kind of set that up, but it's been really cool because it's fun to see players prove themselves and kind of, you know, prove some of the faith that an org had in them correct, because everyone was roasting this guy last year, obviously. Like he came in, he had a bad year, and I think especially when you are an import, there's extra pressure on you to perform in that way because the expectations are that you have to be not as good as the other people from the region. You have to be better or you're not worth the import slot, right?
100%.
So for him to come in and kind of have a pretty bad year, people were roasting him. And then they stuck with him anyway, and he's been able to perform so much better. So I think he's kind of changing a lot of minds about him, and he's making, you know, 100 Thieves look obviously smarter for keeping him. So that's been pretty cool. What do you guys think about Meech and Ayla so far? Because they've been, I feel like most of the talk about 100 Thieves is always about the top side, but Meech, obviously another really young player. You know, he's Canadian, so he's an NA player, and he seems to be doing pretty solid as well.
Yeah, I feel like their bot lane's been solid. Ayla's actually a player that has kind of quietly impressed me most of the time. He's not like the most like loud player, I guess. He doesn't have super memorable performances, but I feel like he's just always doing a good job. And with support, that's kind of what you want, you know. So much of it is the vision game, which you can't always understand when you're watching. From like the spectator POV, because you see everything, right? But just getting the map set up, playing lane well and stuff. I think Ayla's been doing a good job.
Before we jump to TL, who's in third, do you guys think now that 100 Thieves is legit? Like, was the power ranking wrong? Are they going to finish, you know, up near the top, or do you think that it's going to kind of come back down to earth?
It's so hard to say because with power rankings, when you look at a power ranking, it's like, okay, top half good, bottom half bad. But the reality is you're comparing it to other teams. And so I think 100 Thieves is good. Like, for sure, I think they're an impressive team. They're playing well. But to be the top half, you have to be better than, you know, C9, Energy, TL, FlyQuest, like some of those at least. And so, you know, Energy and C9 are for sure slumping right now. Will they be able to stay better than them? I don't know. Okay. I think that'll be tough.
So two teams go to MSI, I believe, right? So let's put it at that. Are they an MSI contender or not? Because they're second right now.
I wouldn't give them 0%, but I wouldn't bet on them making it.
Yeah.
Yeah, contender is pretty loose because right now the league is really close. So and they're in second place. So 100%, I feel like you have to say they're a contender. If you want to make it really difficult, then you would have to make people like commit to are they going?
Yeah, probably not. Then that's the feeling I'm getting here, yeah. and I kind of agree with that. But I do think, you know, they have a shot, and it would be really exciting to see a team like that, you know, be able to actually pull it off.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to TL, another team that I think it's fair to say is definitely surprised. They are sitting alone in third place at 5-4. We had them at third, so they're in third. So I guess it's not that surprising, really. But I think they've had a solid split. They haven't been like amazing, but they've kind of just been somewhere in the middle. I don't know. It's kind of hard to talk about them, I guess, in comparison to where my relations are, because I feel like my expectations for them were higher as far as like if I'd guessed their record, I would have thought third had to be better than this. But the league has been more competitive than I thought, so it's like they are still in third place, which is where I predicted them, but they're doing it with a less dominant record, I guess, or a less dominant performance than I kind of thought they would have had.
What about their actual play too? Because I feel like there's been a lot of things that have been really consistently necessary in their wins. You know, like Udyr. Impact is always playing Udyr.
Yeah.
You know, they a lot of their wins are
scaling.
Are kind of scaling, and
I'm concerned.
And there's a lot of points. There's a lot of points in the game where I don't know. I just feel less certain about the victory.
Yeah. I mean, I literally brought that up. I think it was week two when after week one they like did an aggressive bot lane game one, lost. Went scaling, full scaling, game two, won. Week two, same thing. Day one, mm-hmm. aggressive. Day two, scaling, won, right? And I feel like that's kind of been mostly the recipe. There is a little bit of a blip in the radar here or there. Like they had the Lucian game that they won and so on. But largely, I feel like the recipe for success has been...
Lucian did win.
It did win, technically.
He was on the winning team.
We've had mostly just kind of like tank / frontliner for MD, a tank top, and then scaling mid and bot. And either like enchanter or engage support, you know, and that's kind of been the recipe for success for them. And I do think it is concerning when you're going into playoffs if you only have that one kind of way to play the game, so to speak. It's not to say that you can't pick, you know, various champs within that kind of prototype or within that whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I guess they have been less dominant than I thought they would be, and they have struggled more in some ways than I thought they would. I feel like, looking back to last year, one of the biggest things that this team had was their early game was so good, right? Like they were really, really, really strong early game team. Even in the games that they lost, they always had an amazing early game. I feel like they've kind of lost that. They're on average actually down a little bit in gold, only a little bit, but like this was our best early game team last year, even when they sucked. And it doesn't really feel like they've solved their late game problems either that they had from last year. So it kind of just feels like mostly when they win, they just have kind of outscaled. So That's my concern for this team, even though they are third and I ranked them third.
Yeah, I think that's totally valid criticism. I share some of those concerns, though I will say I feel like if you're going to be a team that is kind of like locked into this meta golem way of playing, if you will, it's a good time for it. Like it's a really good time because so many of the meta picks, especially with Zarya and Smolder coming into play, it looks like it's leaning towards scaling.
Yeah.
And normally when you have that, you know, you want a frontline top and jungler support can kind of play whatever. He can play another tank or an enchanter. And then there's like Aesol, Orianna, Azir, Corki. There's so many mages that are playable right now. Ziggs for APA, of course. So I think they will still have enough stuff to play even if they're, you know, kind of committed to this like very standard gameplay.
You don't think it'll be able to be punished for it?
But then
maybe.
But then we have Umpty level one flashing over the
that was
Baron
crazy.
Wall on Xin Zhao, and then in the interview afterwards, he's talking about and I don't care after I die. I was just like, fine, you deserve that kill. I'm still gonna play like a psychopath, and then he kept on doing it. So I feel like this team definitely can. You know, Umpty and Core JJ always likes to play that way as well. Core JJ is, I feel like his whole history has been way more towards Nautilus and Rell type of engaged champions than the, you know, Enchanter type champions as well. So I just, I do feel like this team has more to show us. It's just,
they're running out of time to do it a bit.
Yeah. I mean, their most recent game against Shopify, I think, was pretty good. You know, they were playing, like, Ignite top Rumble. Like yep. you said, Umpty was invading everything. That invade where he flashed over the wall was so crazy. I mean, the most embarrassing part is that Vi saw him do that. Like, she finished her red and then was going to Krugs, and she just seizes and Zhao flash in. Like, if I saw that, I wouldn't for sure missing ping it. I'd be like, what did I just watch? So, yeah, I mean, even though that play didn't go well, he was playing super aggro all game. And I like the way that he was playing, because some of those fights, like, there's no way he knew he was going to get out of those fights. Like, I remember him going in, like, 1v3 into, like, the bot side jungle at, like, level 4 and then getting out at 1 health and setting his team up for a good fight. So that kind of stuff, you know, it's I think that's good. It's good gameplay. Like, you're putting out a lot of pressure. You're setting up your team for success, making it hard for the other team to play. So I want to see more of that for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think definitely core on like engage type champs, like you were saying, I think Bard, Rakan, Nautilus, any of those, Rell. I think he's comfortable on him, and it just helps the team out a lot having someone who's like
the go button.
Yeah, yeah, like a good, competent go button player is so useful.
That's why I feel like I could definitely see this team doing better and even being an MSI rep for us. But I could also see it continuing on this path or even completely flopping, you know. It's kind of hard to pin down and depends on the improvements that they can make over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I do have a lot of – I'm definitely super biased because I'm good friends with him, but I also have a lot of faith in Spawn as a coach. And
also kinda, biased. Love me some Spawn.
And so, yeah, it's funny because I'm, like, super biased for a lot of the you know, coaches and players in the league. Friends with so many of them, but – I do feel like we're in a very unique situation where we've never had a 2 week break before, and we're starting to go down the list of now we're getting to the teams where we're consistent storyline is going to be what can they fix and change over this big 2 week break.
Yeah,
you know, Team Liquid is just the tip of the iceberg. As we get to the next tier with Energy and Cloud9, teams that were expected to be at the very top.
I actually think my hot take is. I think the teams that are doing poorly are going to benefit from this break so much more than the top teams. I think that, obviously, like, I could be totally wrong, but I think FlyQuest and 100 Thieves are not going to level up as much.
Send it again. They just want to keep playing.
Well, yeah, I feel like they're not going to level up as much during the break because it's like that passive mindset thing, right? It's like your energy coming into this break, you just lost 4 straight games. You guys are pissed. You're like, okay, like, we are not playing well. Like, we need to get this together. Like, you're just... You have so much more motivation, whereas FlyQuest, like, first place, baby. Like, what's up? Like, we're in playoffs. We can chill. Like, let's just keep doing what we're doing kind of deal. And it's like, I mean, obviously they're good, but I feel like, especially for an extended break, having that extra motivation, like that fire is actually going to help a lot.
It's funny you say that because I heard, I don't know if this is 100% confirmed or anything, it's just rumors, but I had heard FlyQuest was actually they're the only team that's going to take times off scrims. So they're taking a break. To you know, relax and reset a little bit, which could work really well if it avoids burnout and stuff. But
how are you burning out after 10 games, yeah, bro?
I'm just saying, you know, like it could you know be a nice little reset, or
you shouldn't need a reset. This
I'm just saying.
This is the shortest LCS split we've ever had.
Or dude, I'm just so stressed. I need a break. I've played a whole one round robin. I am done.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here. but yeah, I mean, we'll have to see, right? Because it's like you say. Some of these bottom teams are going to be really hungry, and their coaches, their staff, they're going to be on their ass because they know that for the reality is when you're at the bottom, doing better is what needs to happen for you to keep your job a lot of the time. And that can make players really hungry, right? So if other people are grinding harder and they start to take it for granted, things can change really, really fast in these last couple of weeks because we still have 5 more games to play in a super week, especially that can be the difference, right? I mean, between 3rd and 8th, it is 2 games. So it's a very, very close league right now. And with that, we can jump into the next clump. It is 3 teams. Do you have something else you want to touch on first?
I was just going to say, to a similar point that you brought up at the beginning of the show when we're talking about the FlyQuest show match of LCS team playing the Challengers team, and they're not it being kind of like a lose-lose for the LCS team, or like a draw at best, you know, oh, you're expected to win. It's kind of a similar thing when you're talking about who's going to benefit most. Will it be the teams at the top? I mean, them benefiting looks like, oh, you stay at the top, whereas the teams at the bottom have so much more to gain.
Well, you could I don't fully agree with that, because it's not like 100 Thieves and FlyQuest are just like, we're flawless teams and there's nothing we can improve upon. I think if you're being lazy about it, or you're not hungry for it, like what you're talking about, then yeah, the teams at the bottom are going to maybe learn more from it. But it's not like you couldn't be cooking up new picks and new strategies and working on different things during this 2-week break to try to come back and be a more complete team, or be a team with
but it's
new
more
things.
Difficult to. If you're at the top, there's less obvious. That's the point.
Yeah, because sure. I mean, I've played a good amount of LCS, and just the entire atmosphere of the team. I've dabbled in a bit of LCS. The entire atmosphere is so different. Like, if you just came off a 2-0 week or an 0-2 week, like, you know, if you just had a 2-0 week, like, you walk by any of the managers or anything, they're all like smiling and waving to you, being like, nice job this weekend. Oh, man, like, you killed it. You have an 0-2 week, and like, they will not
they're
look
flipping
you in the
you
eye.
Off
they, and... they are like, they act like you don't exist. You're dead to them. Like they're turning the AC way down. Like, it's they're locking you in the scrim room. Like, it's crazy stuff. So absolutely, I think it, like, obviously no team tries to get complacent. Everyone takes measures against it. But the reality is just it's harder. Like, you don't have that, like, actual physical, like, pressure put on you that feel like that pain
physical
of
pressure.
Yeah, no, it's a real thing.
That's why I think discipline is so important, right?
It's
setting your schedule, setting your goals, setting your, like, and just keeping the same routine, win or lose, right? I think is incredibly important. And I do think that there's a reason that some players are able to maintain, you know, their performance at the top for so long, and other players are more peaks and valleys and so on. And I think a lot of it has to do with discipline, right? Like, there's a reason that some players have been able to be, you know, successful for so long. I think that they're less affected by those external pressures. They're better at handling it or whatever. Like, guys like Impact, who have literally, his career is what, 10 plus years at this point?
Yeah. He won Worlds over 10 years ago. That's insane.
It's
and he's still going.
Insane, right? And he's doing really well still. And almost unanimously, you talk to any top laner in the league, they'll tell you Impact is legit. He's really, really good. Even when he goes international these days, he still does well against, like, the big name LCK and LPL top laner. So it's like, it is obviously doable to kind of maintain your level of performance. But I hear you. It's obviously a lot harder, I think. To stay hungry when you're at the top.
On the other side, at least they have it in their mind. You know, Bwipo, even after week two, was it? He was tweeting out how happy he was that even after their wins, the team was immediately discussing what they could have done better. That being said, you know, even if you have that on your mind of like, oh yeah, you know, don't get complacent. It's still difficult sometimes.
Yep. All right. Well, we got a big clump of teams next. Three teams tied in fourth. Some surprising ones down there. Energy, C9, and Dig.
One of these is not like the other.
No.
Only one?
So Energy and C9 are one and two.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't think... Yeah. If you didn't give me any of the records or their placements and you said Energy, C9, and Dig were all tied, I'd be like, yeah, Dig's having an incredible split. Yeah. Which, I mean, maybe they are, but it's also like... Energy and C9 are...
This is in our power rankings. Number one, C9. Number two, Energy. And number seven for Dig. And they are all tied.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
How is Dig... I don't know. Dig is...
Coming off a 2-0 weekend, by the way.
Yeah.
Where Dove was smurfing.
They're quietly just playing really well. And I like watching their games, too. They're doing stuff. You know, XU is very fun to watch. He's super active. I feel like almost every single game, he's been in the enemy jungle... on his first clear, doing something.
He's going to make something happen.
Yeah.
You got to respect it, especially too for a player who, I know he played in LCS for a bit before, but like not a lot of LCS experience. I think this is the first time he's been the intended starter in the LCS. I think he played when they swapped in a whole academy team after it was like season was boom kind of thing before. But it, like I respect the fact that if you're coming in here as a player who like was aggressive in academy, you're still trying to maintain that in the LCS, because I feel like we've seen so many times players lose that kind of identity and that play style. Kenvy is a really good recent example to me, where there was so much hype around him, you know, coming up through 100 next and then 100 academy and all this stuff, and then he gets the LCS and he's just like on tank duty every day, you know, when he was known as like Graves, Kindred, hyper aggressive, all this stuff. So I think it's kind of cool that XU is keeping that more aggressive playstyle and that more aggressive identity, which, you know, also the coaching staff deserves some credit for that too, like for giving players space to kind of play their way. Because I do think a lot of times we've seen players over the years come up and they're known as one thing in academy, and then I feel like they kind of get to LCS and try to get shoved into the mold by either themselves or their coach or whoever, and it just doesn't work, right?
I mean,
like,
it can be teammates too. I think that so much of players being able to play well is, you know, it's an entire team thing, because on like say you're Dignitas, right? They've been near the bottom of the standings this whole time, and it's so easy. Like, say you're in scrims, XU does one of these early invades, it goes horribly, you lose. You're just like, can you just stop early invading, dude? Like, can you just play normal? Can you full clear so we can play the game? But obviously, that's just going to make your team worse. Teams love these band-aid fixes that's like, okay, I don't want to make that exact mistake that lost us a previous game. But in doing so, maybe you're closing the door to so many other, like, possibilities, right? And then you get locked into, like, you know, the lowest common denominator, which is this, like, I'm on tank duty and I'm going to farm and I'm going to take zero risks ever. And like, we've all seen how that looks. It's just bad.
You just bleed out slowly every game.
Yeah.
It's really easy to misdiagnose the root cause of a problem in League of Legends games, because there are so many things that chain off of those decisions. And I was also going to bring up, it's even more impressive to me how good XU has looked recently, because I actually got really worried at the beginning of the season. The second pros that they did, or it might have even been the first pro podcast that we did at the end of the weekend, he was talking about how difficult the communication was with Dove and Rich and how their English wasn't very good at the moment. And they were using those like cut down league jargon, simplified terms to just like say something and then hope that they fully get what your plan is.
Yeah.
That is really scary as a jungler when you're trying to communicate and you just kind of cross your fingers and hope that your solo lanes.
You get a help top.
Yeah, so I just think that there have been some moments, you know, there was like this Baron fight where they were really disconnected, and there have been some moments where they disconnected, but I really think that it's even more impressive that they've been able to seemingly come up with a good enough communication structure and game plan structure to be able to execute on some of these things, which are pretty difficult and do need that coordination.
I also think it's even more interesting to me that this team is 4-5, which I would have been, regardless of if C9 and NRG were tied with them or not, I would have been like, damn, Dig, you're doing well. 4-5, that's good. I'm more surprised by the fact that I thought Rich was going to be the guy that they could count on. I feel like Rich has been surprising for almost negative reasons. Like, I feel like he hasn't been very good overall. I don't think he's been like egregious or anything, but he definitely hasn't been their standout player by any means. I felt like he performed actually a lot better last year. And I feel like Dove and XU to me are the two that have stood out the most in kind of like a positive way as far as like expectation versus reality for me. I feel like their bot lane has been okay, but hasn't really like, you know, hasn't really been amazing by any means. To me, it's been much more about like XU and Dove and how they've been playing. I thought in particular this last week, I thought Dove actually had some really, really good games. And he's another one of those guys that people were kind of like, who the hell is this? Like, why are we importing him? You know, like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, why didn't we just get a regional player? But I thought he played quite well. And I think was that the game? Oh, yeah, that was the game where he was playing against Palafox, and Palafox he tweeted out what he thought his worst game ever was. But that was a bizarre game where Dove was playing a Trist into Palafox. Palafox like TP'd back to lane. And then I don't know what happened, but it looked like he just like move commanded into him and just like walked up to him and just like lost his whole health and just had to base again immediately without like attacking.
Might have been alt tabbed. Might have saw a funny tweet or something.
Scrolling Twitter.
He wasn't laughing after that.
No. But I thought Dove had some good games. XU actually looked pretty good on the Ivern and stuff as well, which is, it's kind of cool to see that that diversity, I guess.
Yeah, Dignitas definitely been a strong competitor, which is, I think, is a very good thing. We're probably going to emphasize this a lot as we're getting towards the bottom of the standings, but how close the LCS has been as a league as a whole, and how, you know, some of these games that in the past where you saw it on the schedule and you're like, ah, that one, maybe that's not going to be so fun, or, you know, one of the teams is going to be like a free win. It just certainly has not been the case this year.
I think Dignitas for me is my top two favorite team to watch as far as how their games go. No, actually, it's Energy and Dig.
Okay, because like, Cloud9 pays you, right?
Cloud9 pays me.
Just checking.
That being still said, not a top two favorite team to watch.
I mean, I like
that's how good Energy is.
Time to give them a raise.
Okay, maybe most entertaining game. Because, like, I swear, Energy and Dig games are never boring. Yeah. There's always something going on, whether it's good or bad for them.
Jack?
I mean, C9, they're getting it together. They're figuring it out. They'll be good. Yeah. I'm not worried.
We're just trolling.
Yeah, but... yeah, definitely they have, like, just fun games. And that's what we're here for, man. I want fun games. I'll always cheer for the team that loses in a fun way than the team that wins in the most boring way.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's been something that's cool about a lot of our teams. I think our top teams, our bottom teams, a lot of teams have been, you know, trying different things. Shopify and Immortals, we'll obviously get to them later, but, like, they've been cooking stuff, and those are the teams that are tied at the bottom. So I agree. It's been a lot of fun. Do you guys want to jump into Energy a bit more? Because they're now on a 4-game losing streak. So... When we were doing our predictions, everyone thought, okay, by the end of the split, they'll probably finish second. But I know when we were talking about, we're like, but they might start slow. They might, you know, we've heard some rumors they're not really practicing a lot. Things aren't going that well. They're going to start slow, but they're going to be really good by the end of the split. They actually started quite hot. They started 4-1. They were up at first place, and now they lost 4 in a row. And this last game was really, really rough, that the Palafox Orianna won. So they're kind of like, It's making me a bit nervous of, like, are you going to get together? Like, are you actually just not going to be a good team this split? Are they still going to be able to kind of do what they did last split, which is just, like, make it to playoffs, then turn it on? I don't know.
I'm definitely convinced that they are a good team. They are for sure. And this is one of the topics that we thought they were going to have to tackle, dealing with the pressure of being the previous champion. And you get so much dopamine from winning the LCS, then going to Worlds, and everyone is cheering for you when you come back to NA. Like, you're the hero because you beat G2. You did so many good things in the last year that it is really hard to live up to that and maintain your position at the very peak. And you have lofty goals for yourself as well. And then they did make only one change, but it's a change in a role where, from what they're saying, Ignar wasn't actually talking that much, and who he talks a lot, and they already had a lot of people who talk a lot. And so not only are you now dealing with these super high expectations, but you are incorporating another piece that is a super big voice and has a long history, you know, with FBI and in the LCS in general. And so it does feel like, you know, that thing is something that they're still wrestling with. And the one issue that we thought of, oh, you know, it'll be slow start because they took the break, that wasn't an issue. But this, like, fully, you know, coming to grips with a new mindset really is. Because when you're the mindset of the underdog and the perma underdog, these players have been underdogs for years and years and years. Not only because, you know, they were on Energy for that year, but also the history of all of them being demoted back to, you know, Academy or working their way so long through the, you know, upcoming ladder of professional play in North America, that this is the first time. And for a lot of them, except for Contracts, of course, who started on Cloud9 and went to Worlds, for them to have these types of expectations. And so it is... I think that is probably the thing that they're going to have to spend the most time on in this 2-week period. I think they are a good team. I think they could, you know, easily climb back to the top, but...
So you're not doubting the power ranking?
There's a reason why I also chose them as one of my two teams in my bet.
Yeah. So you still feel good that they should make MSI?
I think so. I definitely, because the league is so strong, you know... Okay.
There's no guarantees. Of
fair
course.
Play, another team pushes them out. But I do still have a lot of confidence in this team. If they don't show a pretty big improvement after the 2 week break, though, then I will be extremely worried. And that goes for Cloud9 as well for me.
Yeah.
These two teams are, for me, it's the most important 2 week break for any of the teams in the LCS.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is a little bit of a tangent. Did you play with Ignar before?
No.
Okay, I could have sworn you were on a team with him, but I guess I'm trolling. It was interesting because Revenge was talking on Hotline on Ling League, and one of the questions they got asked was, who is the best teammate you ever played with? And he said Ignar. And he was talking about how Ignar is just insane teammate. He's like really, really funny. He like really knows, you know, like what is important to review and like key things in the game that people need to improve upon and stuff. And I thought that was interesting because he was basically saying it's like, yeah, there's only one change, but like it's an Ignar diff. The team's just not going to be as good anymore, even though who he is obviously a really good player and did really well last year for Golden Guardians. He seemed to be of the opinion that it's like, yeah, energy's not that good anymore because they don't have Ignar.
That could be true. Ignar has been pretty solid on a lot of different teams that he's been on. Energy does not look as good as they did last year, but I don't know. I think whenever there's like such a small sample size of games, it can be so many different things. Like when I'm looking through the champions they've been playing, like FBI is kind of playing some random stuff, right? Like I'm seeing zero Varus games. Like I guess the meta is changing with Smolder and Zeri coming in, but a lot of that can just be like you had the wrong meta read, so you had some bad weeks, but that doesn't mean you're a bad team. I think what makes players good is like how do you play as a team, your overall awareness, your reads on situations, how you play team fights, that kind of stuff. And they're all good players. Like, you know, I have no doubt that Energy can still be, you know, near the top of the standings. They could probably make MSI, although I will say they're not looking that good right now.
It is interesting, though, too, because with the meta moving back towards Zeri, I know a lot of pro players have had some really, like, negative things to say about FBI Zeri when they talked to me in the past. Like, they were saying this is one of the champions that, like, this guy just cannot play. Mm-hmm. And I know statistically, it kind of supports that a little bit. It's like his worst win rate champion out of like anything with very many games at all. Like he has a 41% win rate on Zeri. Kai'Sa is a 78% win rate. You know, Ezreal and Felios are his other two most played. Varus is up there, which is kind of weird that he hasn't been playing.
Kai'Sa buffs next patch.
Oh, yeah, Kai'Sa, there you go. Be right back to
the
it.
The thing is, AD carries have this selective memory where they forget how good Kai'Sa and Xayah are until they start playing him again. They're just like, oh, these AD carries who are unkillable and do infinite damage, I guess they're still good, guys. Big surprise.
The Kai'Sa buffs are going to be insane. And we'll talk about that next week because the patch is going to be coming out next week. There's a lot of changes that are going to be coming out next week. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm cautiously optimistic that they could still get it together because they were pretty trash in summer regular season anyway. And then they really made it work in playoffs. They were more consistently good against the good teams, though, I will say, and consistently bad against the bad teams. This split, they've kind of just been like they were really good, now they're bad. So
maybe it was just chance then too.
There you go. It's all just luck. League of Legends, you know, first
luck
last.
Into a 2-0 in G2.
Yeah, exactly.
Either you win or you lose.
50% chance to beat any team.
You know, one thing that is weird though is in the beginning of the split, it did feel like Energy was getting affected by what people were saying and the way that they kept making statements about how like, you know, oh, we fluked to another 2-0 week or whatever.
Yeah.
And anytime I see that, I'm like, you really shouldn't be focused on that. Like, as players, all you need to do is focus on how do I get better as a team? How do I beat my next opponents? As soon as you start buying into what the fans are saying, it's like, you know, you start like identifying with their narratives and stuff. I feel like it's never helpful. So hopefully that's not getting to them too much.
Yeah. Even if you're aware of the possible ego with winning the split and going to Worlds and all that stuff, it's still always going to be really hard to keep in check and focus. What about Cloud9, though? Because we got to move over to the other team in this tier. Cloud9, they tweeted out, we're so back after their scaling win, which was over Energy, I believe. And then they immediately back to another loss.
It was like, was it really a loss? It was a throw for sure. I mean, they got they got a pentakill. Like, I don't know, you debated.
Were they trolling Meteos?
Probably. They were playing for the Penta, and then as soon as they got that, you know, they felt like they won. And
I felt
they
like they low key. So I didn't super super examine it, but I think I was casting this game if I recall correctly, and I remember when I was watching it, thinking they could have just ended instead of chasing for the Penta.
Yeah, it did kind of look like that. It's hard to say for sure because you know they would have had one more person defending it.
Yeah,
but it was for sure a throw. I mean, they won one game and they hard threw another. And I don't know. I can't doubt these guys. The probably biggest
contractually I mean, obligated.
I will lose money if I... No, I'm just kidding.
I literally cannot doubt them. Jack is following me everywhere.
Send help. No, the one criticism I will throw them is Vulcan is still kind of like, you know, underperforming a little bit compared to the expectations because he was really good. He had the off year on FlyQuest last year, and we were all expecting him to bounce back in a big way, but he's still not looking that great so far. You know, like he's had some misplays. I know he's not happy with the way he's playing, but it could just be the champions as well. I want to see him, you know, kind of like what we were saying about Core, put him on the playmaking champs, put him on like Nautilus, Rakan. His Bard was okay.
His Bard on Saturday, oh, that one play.
The flash Q towards Raptors.
But imagine if it hit. Imagine if it worked. No, I mean, that was pretty gross.
I feel like historically, that's been one of his better champions too, no? Like, I always kind of thought he had a nasty Bard.
His game following that one, he picked Bard again.
He played a lot better in the loss. Yeah, he did actually play a lot better in the loss. But that was... Did you think that there was anything to just like, okay, you're saying is a monster throw in the second game. Do you think, though, that it was like a narrow win condition type game as well? Because it did feel like it was pretty hard for JoJo to do anything against that team comp, it felt like. I remember, so it was Melio, Varus, Talia, Vi, and Aatrox. And it just felt like if they couldn't get like a multi-prong type flank, like, you know, that type of fight, it was so impossible for them to just like walk at this team. You have Sejuani ult, which is so easily answered by Melio. And then every time JoJo tried to do anything, he just got 100-0 in the Shroud. Like, I remember on one fight on mid lane, he's coming from the side on mid lane. He gets Vi ulted, gets his Shroud down, and he just gets seismic shoved out of it. And Varus Q'd, and he's just dead.
I was super impressed by 100 Thieves that fight. That was another one of the examples why I was like, wow, this team's actually legit.
Their team fighting is good.
Yeah, I mean... I think it was River and Sniper were both sort of like posturing up to bait JoJo to go for the flank. Because, you know, from JoJo's perspective, it's like, okay, they're going in. I remember, I think it was Blabber got jumped on. And then as soon as JoJo shows up, they Vi ult him. They Aatrox combo him. They Talia combo him. And like you said, he threw down the Shroud and just died immediately. And that is like such heads up play. They were all ready for it. They're saying, okay, yeah, as soon as Akali goes in, we're just going to kill him.
They have a Zeri and they have an Olaf, though. I feel like if their Olaf was in a position to be a much bigger carrying force in that game than he ended up being, and they have Berserker on Zeri. So I feel like their actual possibilities for winning were fine coming into that, with even given the draft, because it's like they have a lot of good tools. I still feel like even though Quid was playing insane, I felt that Talia was causing them the most problems. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely feel like there were some play opportunities rather than just some like draft stuff.
I mean, yeah, especially after the Penta, for sure.
I don't think it was totally in a draft. I mean, there was also like, you know, I think Berserker gave Sniper a 1K bounty right after the Penta as well. I didn't exactly see how that happened.
He died bot lane by the tier 2, I think it was.
Yeah, he died near Krugs, but like...
I think they kind of overstayed and 100 Thieves like respawned and came out and killed them or something like
something
that.
Something like that. But either way, you know, you probably shouldn't be giving a 1K bounty to an Aatrox. So, yeah, I think C9, they're getting back into it. I think they're one of those teams that you put them in a best of series and they're going to turn it on. So... just best of one things.
What do you think then?
I just think it's so funny because yesterday I was repeating so many times, not yesterday, the last episode that we did.
Yeah.
If you're trolling 50% of the time, then you're like just a 50% team. And they did it again. They 50%. One game troll, one game not troll.
Well, that's a lot better than their 45% four losses team before that.
And they won the first three before that, so they were storing it up.
Okay. They're storing up the loss.
It's just like, I don't know how many... I'm done giving out, like, you know, we threw or trolling passes, I guess.
Yeah. No, me too. I mean, they have some real problems. It's interesting because I feel like the most flame I've been seeing is definitely towards Fudge. And then their bot lane, I feel like, is starting to get quite a bit of heat. JoJo, I feel like, has largely just kind of been getting a pass. Everyone's kind of like, oh, JoJo's really good. Team needs help him or whatever. But I will say this Akali game, he was insane.
That was one of his worst games.
He was insanely useless.
Yeah.
And he was also had... the craziest farm like of all time, it felt like, early game. He's playing melee versus ranged, and he was at, I want to say, 225 CS at 19 minutes or something like that. It was something ridiculous. I know that The stats people said, like, out of like LEC, LCK, and LCS, it was the second highest total farm in the like of the year of any player. And it was like in like a quote unquote like losing matchup. You should be like not being able to farm that well or whatever. And then by the end of the game, he's down 150 or 160 CS or something, and like it didn't feel like he could get anything done. I do think that 100 Thieves did a really good job answering him. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that it's all just like team issues or this or that, like things that you can kind of just say, they trolled here, they trolled there. Like there clearly are some individual play issues, and you know, Vulcan has been getting criticism, Fudge has been getting criticism, but I think that, you know, JoJo's had a bad game definitely too this weekend.
Yeah, I think everyone on C9 has kind of had their fair share of moments where they don't look very good.
The Berserker Lucian game was horrible, that all in we talked.
You guys
about
ready to eat some lemons?
They'll be fine. Nah, but that just happens. Like, I think when your team is going through struggles, you know, you're trying to figure out how you want to approach different problems. I'm sure if you go to any team, you'll find players who would view the same situation completely differently and how you want to play it.
Yeah.
And so when you're still figuring it out, you're not totally on the same page for what you want to do, that's when you get these games where, like, you know, someone's just like, you're not fully engaged in what's going on right now. You're thinking about, like, you know, okay, what am I supposed to be doing in this situation? You're not playing naturally. You start making mistakes. And So I'm curious to see how they do after the break. I think they'll be quite a bit better, you know, if they manage to figure it out how they want to play.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. I know there's also been a lot of criticism about their drafts because they're playing Lucian and stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean, they're some of them are real sus.
But yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see. You know, for both Energy and Cloud9, I think the pressure is big time on in these 2 weeks to really make things happen, to really improve. We are now down to the last two teams, Shopify and IMT. They're both tied at 3-6, so they're not far behind by any means as far as, you know, catching up to these rest of the teams, making playoffs, having a chance. But it does feel like the you know, like hype around them being able to kind of like make a push has started to peter off. Shopify, you know, did get a couple wins, like all their wins actually were against top teams. But it does feel like they're having a little bit more of a tough time. And Immortals in Super Week, I want to say, was 2-1 in Super Week. But outside of that, it does feel like they've really struggled. And I think they were 0-2 again this weekend.
I'm a little bit sad because in the podcast that they did at the end of this most recent week, Insanity mentioned that he would have liked to play more standard picks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that's what they're going to do moving forward, because they have racked up a decent amount of losses. And that's been one of my like most exciting things with a lot of the bottom teams this year has been, well, they're picking really exciting drafts and doing more, you know, different stuff. If they just become a Orianna, you know, spamming team or something like that, then maybe it'll be more exciting because they'll pick other stuff around it, or they're, you know, and they'll start winning more or playing better. I just hope that they still retain the identity of being able to pull out something that is not crazy, but off meta and used as a counter to something. So they're not like leading with it so the other team can then counter them, but they hold it and they will be able
to. Physical and your fifth pick is a tank mid or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I think to your point on what they were saying about, you know, wanting to play more standard, going back to what I was saying about, like, you need to avoid narratives if you're a pro player, right? Like, you shouldn't pick off meta because you're trying to be, like, this creative player, and you shouldn't play meta because people are saying you can't play it. Like, you should just pick what you think is the best thing and what your team thinks is the best thing and not really care about what the community says about it, because, you know, there is a certain perception when you're only playing tanks mid and you can only win on tanks mid. People are wondering, like, okay, is this guy just trash? Like, can he not compete on real champions? But it's not on you as a player to try to prove him wrong, because in my personal experience, you know, when I first joined LCS on C9, we did really well. People like calling me a farm jungler and stuff. It's like, oh, he's just a farm jungler.
The Zach guy.
Yeah, and I'm not going into gaming like, okay, I'm not going to farm a single camp this game. I'll show these guys, like, I'm not a farm jungler. I'm just like, say what you want. I don't care. I'm playing to win. I'm doing what I think is the best to win. And I think you just got to be able to block out those narratives, like really not care about what Reddit, the community, even what we're saying. Like, if I say a player is complete trash on this show.
No, they should care about us.
I mean, the players should absolutely not. Like, they might, but it doesn't help them to do that. Like, if I say a player is completely awful, and then they win a game, they're like, I'm here to prove Medios wrong. I'm just like, why, man? Like, you should be playing to win.
Yeah, to his credit, Insani was just saying that he was directly asked about the, like, narrative, and he was like, well, you know, I don't like it, and I don't agree with it. And he wasn't saying that now he wants to prove it wrong and play more standard stuff. He was like, no, you know, he always thought that things were best used more sparingly or more as counters. And he doesn't pick them just because they're, like, seen as crazy from other people. He actually thinks that is the best thing. So that gave me a lot of confidence, you know, and a lot has been said too with all of these players that have played with Revan, the coach, that he is one of the things he does best is empower them to play what they specifically think is strong. And he identifies, like, okay, what is our best way to play League of Legends? And then goes fully and indexes into that, into their specific player strength. So hopefully that is what will shine through after the break.
Well, and I think a lot of the talk about the meta stuff came up because they beat FlyQuest, and they beat FlyQuest with this super standard draft, right? And everyone was like, well, why weren't they just doing that the whole time then, right? But obviously it's like not always that are they going to be able to replicate this result. And so much that I thought that Boogie was really good in that game on the Wukong and got giga fed on the Wukong, and that champion from ahead with other ways to actually start to fight, like the Rakan with an Orianna behind you as well, like, you can go crazy, right?
That combo Wukong Orianna is nuts, because
so good.
People are doing the Orianna Nocturne a lot, which, you know, that's, you know, pretty unfair in its own way, but Wukong can do similar things. You know, you clone, or like, you stealth in, and then you like flash ER somebody with an Orianna, and there's not a whole lot you can do if you don't see it coming. So definitely a good combo. I would like to see more Wukong played. He got buffed.
I agree.
And he's just, anytime he's playable, I think he's just such a good champion. He's one of the junglers who does what you need a jungler to be able to do, as far as, like, he can farm, he can duel, but his team fighting is just insane. Like, if you get two items on Wukong, you can just start solo killing carries. You make so much space with your clone ulting as well. I think he's just a really solid champion, as long as he's not, like, you know, just stat checked and unable to clear or whatnot.
Yeah.
Boogie also did a really good job of getting fed in that game. I was like, especially after the top lane play where he got away with like 20 HP and got all of those kills, I was very much ready for a jungle takeover.
One thing that I actually have noticed about Shopify games, because you mentioned that top lane thing, is that for whatever reason, whether it's Fate God's fault or the team's, he is always getting dove. In almost every single game, he's getting tower dove and killed. And, you know, it's not necessarily a problem that happens ever, but it seems to happen most games. And I don't know if it's just, like, the way they're setting up their map, he's unaware that this is coming. If he doesn't care that this is coming, he's just going to tank the dive. Because in that play where Boogie got really fed, I watched it afterwards, and I was like, why is Wukong not there? But he was taking the dragon.
Yeah.
And so the other team's just doing the classic thing, okay, we can't contest dragon, let's make a cross map play top. And then Fake God, you know, just insta-died to it. He tried to defend. It's like, I don't know if he wasn't aware that they were coming, or because it seems hard for me to believe that their setup is like, yeah, like, we'll just tank this dive top, I'll die, we'll TP in, we'll die, we'll get them all low, Boogie will come clean up. It's like, that's not a play you can orchestrate. It just happened to work out for them. And so I do wonder a little bit about the team and, like, how their communication around top lane is working, because, like, Fake God gets dove and killed, like, I would say most of their games, which when you watch other teams, like, it's, the top laner isn't in that situation as often. So
yeah,
definitely something that maybe they should look at.
I feel like it's always hard to know what the cause is when you're just watching the game from standard spectator, because you're not getting to watch just that lane. It's like, did he mess up his trade so he got chunked out and they got to stack the wave on him? Did he, like, not thin the wave enough to prevent the dive? You know, like, is it a fault of how he's playing the matchup or the waves? Or is it a fault of his team where it's like they're leaving him with no vision and no help and no covers on the dives, you know? But either way, it's like, at the end of the day, I will say, like, that is one of the most important things for top laners is understanding, like, how to give up the minimum without dying a lot, right?
Yeah.
And I do think that's something that really good top laners do seem to have, that kind of sixth sense of when, okay, no, I actually just have to back off here. I actually have to, you know, like, sacrifice this. I have to give up that when their team is playing the other side of the map. And I've always been so impressed by some players. Impact, obviously, is always kind of known as someone who's really, really good at this. It's like, you can watch a game sometimes where you would be getting focused. Your team is playing not towards you at all. You're having to back up, give up waves. And then you look in at like 18 minutes, 20 minutes, they're down like 10 CS. And it's like, it literally didn't matter at all, right? And if you can kind of keep it to that bare minimum, which is way more difficult than it looks, but if you can do that, it's so good for your team because then all the advantages you got on the other side of the map are really gonna outweigh that, right?
Yep.
Whereas if you make that big mistake, you try to greed for it, you try to defend the dive 1v2 or whatever, and you die, then the floodgates can start to open and all of a sudden, like, Thanos just comes down from the top lane with 4 kills and 2 towers and your team can't really do anything about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, our last team is Immortals. They are down, predicted to be 8th, they're tied for 7th. I will say, to their credit, I do think they're a lot more competitive in the games than I thought that they would be. 3 and 6, they're not that far behind, you know, where a lot of these other teams are. Again, only two games back of where TL is, I believe it is. So obviously still in striking distance. And like, I have been happy that they have been really competitive, but at the end of the day, I do think that they're still struggling to find like a consistent way to win. They're struggling to find like a clear identity. I think Olay has been fun to watch, and Olay has been pretty solid.
Yep.
I think Castle has been kind of struggling. He's had some good games, but
His Aatrox ones were really good.
Yeah, the Aatrox versus Yone, everyone was popping off about. That was like really crazy. Cancel like four of Yone's spells in a row or something like that.
Rich got played.
Yep.
Rich's Yone was not it. I'm sorry. Like.
A little bit sus.
It wasn't good.
Yeah,
it was not a good Yone game. But yeah, going back to IMT, I'm definitely agreeing with what you guys are saying. I think not horrible, but probably going to be hard for them to move up in the standings. They look fairly outmatched compared to most other teams, and I think Olay is kind of like their bright spot. I think he has looked really good in a lot of games, like especially his Bard games where he was making that champ look so unfair. Then you see other people try it, and it didn't look anything close.
And it's looking balanced.
Yeah, less than balanced. Wouldn't want that on my team. But yeah, Ole's Bard for sure, very good. And so, I don't know. It's hard, I think, if your support is your guy who needs to carry you. Like, they can do so much, but
yeah,
at some point, if your laners are just struggling to keep up, then it's hard to win.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of the ones where, and it's reflected in our preseason power ranking since we're doing this through the lens of where do we expect them to be, where are they, and you know they're tied for last, and we all had them in last. They are still, like, I would say they're winning more games, like 3 wins. I expected them to be super last.
Yeah.
Now they're only
not
like
just last.
They're barely last.
This is like medium last place or like a pretty strong last place. Yeah. I mean, think so, about how many times have we
solid last.
How many times have we gone through half of an LCS split and we didn't have a last place team that had 0, 1, or even 2 wins?
No,
like,
it's totally
this is
true.
Crazy. Our last place teams that are tied for last place have 3 wins because of how competitive it has been. So even though they are last place, it's another one of those ones where looking through the lens, like, they have still had some very strong team comps. Like, I like their incorporation of the Ivern a bunch as mm-hmm. well with our Mayo and trying
TF AD carry.
The TF AD carry that is not really the not the pick's fault. Like, I just thought that was so good from FlyQuest. Inspired comes over and they split the map and he's one
that
CS.
Was it's such a disgusting game. Like, I don't know. I'm sorry.
It was, what, 26 CS to 1 or something?
You had 1 CS for long time. I remember
almost every part of that, dude. Like, so I'm not going to lie. I think I've been trying some TF because I'm wondering in the back of my head. I'm like, this champion just seems broken. Why are people
it
not
is.
Playing him? And I think he might fall into that category of these deceptively not as easy as they look type champs, especially with the change to his W, because, like, it's going to take, I think, a decent amount of games to get the muscle memory for, like, how to properly do the auto reset while locking the correct card. Because it's like, okay, I have my gold card. I'm going to wait for my auto, and then I'll lock it. Oops, it's a blue one now. And so, my bad. Got some mana at least. So I think that people are still figuring out the build. Like, Tactical's build was something else. Stormraiser, static.
I think he did Shiv Rush, didn't he?
If it's Shiv Rush,
yeah.
If it's so hard to play, why is the win rate so high for solo queue for all these random people that are just flooding in and starting to play? Twisted Fate top is one of the highest win rates. Twisted Fate mid is one of the highest win rates. Twisted Fate in AD carry position is one of the highest win rates, both with AP build and AD build.
I mean, that's true. So I think to that, I would say, I think so, TF is kind of a solo queue champ, especially with new build, because like, how many of the kills that TF gets do you think is him ulting on someone and then just stat 100%. Checking them?
That's what I was
going
to say.
Yeah, because they're going like Kraken Gwinsus and literally just killing you with autos. And the amount of surprised kills TF gets is probably like an all-time high right now. People are just like, how did he just kill me? Like, what was that damage?
But also, it's like, no one respects TF in solo queue at all, right? Like, just your roams, right? Like, whereas in pro, every time you're missing, everyone's going to talk about it and back off and play more respectful. I don't play TF at all, and I've been playing it a little bit randomly recently, and it's like, every time you have ult, you just get a kill, for sure, because it's like, no one's playing around the ulti. People just play so disrespectful. Fights always break out, and it's just like, it's the same reason, you know, some of these other champs with globals can be so powerful in solo queue, because people don't play around it. So I do think that's part of it, and I do think auto reset and some of the stuff that you're talking about does make a big part of it too, because sometimes even high-level TFs you'll be watching, and it's like, they pop their card, and they're like not auto-attacking consistently while they're waiting for the card to lock in, you know what I mean? Like, they're like almost just like running while they're doing it instead of being a...
Yeah, it's weird, man. I'm not going to say it's the hardest thing ever to do, but it definitely isn't...
Pick some games.
Yeah, it's a really new mechanic. Like, there hasn't really been an auto-reset like that, so it's going to take some practice to get used to. Another one, too, is like, if you look at how FlyQuest built in that game, even though they're like the TF was one of the most useless champions we've seen on the Rift so far, they still were stacking tenacity. And in solo queue, you don't get that. You get like the Yone, who has no tenacity and just runs into the TF, gets 2 second gold card, and it's just like, where's my team? In reality, but like Inspired went like Wits End, Sterix, Mercs. At least 3 tenacity items already.
0.1 second gold card.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what his runes were either. It could have been even more. So, like, AD carries will always go cleanse when they're, like, thinking about it. And so TF, definitely a champion that is going to probably always do better in solo queue than competitive play. But I think that maybe if there are some pros who put more time into him, he could still be a really good champ.
Yeah, and Mask played our first Huey as well for the LCS, so... I still enjoy watching Immortals games. There have definitely been seasons in the past where that was not true. And so I think this team is surpassing expectations.
All right, well, that'll wrap it up for us for now. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of Dive. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm, and send us your questions on Twitter with the hashtag TheDiveLOL. We're looking at maybe doing a community questions episode or something over these next couple of weeks. We're also talking to some of the designers and the new patches coming out next week, so maybe we'll have a special guest on. That could be pretty fun. Remember, the LCS is on break. We will be back with games March 2nd, so look for that. Until then, you can catch us every week here on The Dive.